The Village Time Clock marks the year 1971. And for a brief moment, it seems to stand still as Keegan Post Office closes its door after 64 years of service to the people of the vicinity. I like to think of this event as a swinging door, that is, simply an opportunity to share great memories, truly a great heritage. If I may introduce myself, I am Sister Bertha DuPerry, actually teaching at Franklin School in Lawrence, Massachusetts. I teach English as a second language to French-Canadian immigrants, as well as remedial reading in the Title I program. I am also an adult civics education teacher for evening classes and on the staff of the Multi-Service Education Center directed by Sister Gertrude Conyers, Doctor in Education. My part-time services for the center consist in the administration of the Sainte-Denis psychological test given either in French or in English, and teaching during the summer workshop. How am I linked with the Keegan Post Office? My father, Mr. Napoleon DuPerry, was the first postmaster in 1907. But opening this post office was my mother's idea. She was a woman of vision with a brilliant mind. A Canadian by the name of Odalie Peltier, she had married a farmer's son, native of Van Buren. At first, they lived on the DuPerry homestead, where their first child, Anna, was born. Then Dad bought his own farm in Hamlin, where two other children were born, Ida and Irene. These three children would be blessed with a religious vocation, and God would bless this family with seven other children. My mother dreamt of a large family with enough income to educate each one. So she spurred my father on from a small farm to a bigger farm, to opening a store when opportunity knocked. Opportunity came when she heard a lumber mill was being built further north in Van Buren. She foresaw a village building itself around the mill with a store and a post office as needed services. In 1901, my parents lost no time in buying land, choosing the ideal spot, corner of a street leading to the mill. Soon a general store was in full swing, built large enough to contain both a post office and everything any household could possibly need, from nails to boots, from kerosene to cookies. You name it, they had it, or could get it. The mill in Keegan was opened in 1905 by the Brown Company. With the extension of the railroad to that area, it became possible to seriously suggest a post office. My parents hired the services of Attorney Mr. Peter Charles Keegan, and by appointment, discussed the post office idea with the manager of the mill. Later, Irving took over this mill. Then Mr. Edward LaCroix of Canada bought this lumber mill and appointed Antoine LaCroix as manager. Antoine was manager when the mill burned down July 21st, 1930. He lost no time in rebuilding the mill. Antoine was loved by the people and known throughout the valley for his generosity. He was later replaced by Joseph LaCroix, who in turn became manager. But to return to the post office story, both the mill manager and Mr. Peter Charles Keegan highly commended my parents. In fact, they both suggested the name Dew Perry for the post office. But my folks insisted on Keegan for the post office name. Yeah. The story I will soon tell you in detail. But first, let me state that during the 64 years of the Keegan Post Office's existence, the post office remained in the care of the family. My father was appointed first postmaster August 5, 1907 until 1915. When my mother was appointed postmistress. The eldest, Anna, spent but 1 year home after her graduation from the neighboring boarding school. Thereupon, she entered the community of the Good Shepherd Sisters of Quebec. My aunt, Mary Ann Peltier, was post office clerk. He longed to follow a religious vocation, but awaited the graduation of my mother's second-born, Ida, to replace her as postal clerk. When Ida graduated, my aunt then entered the Sisters of Holy Union in Fall River, Massachusetts. Ida assumed the task of postal clerk until my sister Blanche graduated in 1922, for my brother Irene had left for the seminary. He was ordained a marriage priest in 1928. He is actually stationed at St. Teresa's Parish, McEwen, Massachusetts. When Blanche graduated from high school, Ida entered the Order of the Redemptory Saints, close to the Sisters in St. Anne de Beaupré, province of Quebec. Eventually, Blanche had a chance to take a home economic course in St. Pascal, Canada, with the Sisters of the Congregation before getting married in 1929 to Albany Bragin, a local boy. My brother died before getting married to a Grand Isle girl, Irene Baldier, was also postal clerk. Although my brother Lawrence was a great help in the post office, and especially in the store, he never assumed full responsibility, for he left for the Marist Seminary on graduating from Keegan School, and only returned home during summer vacation. Ordained a priest June 11, 1938, he is actually stationed at Our Lady of Victory in Boston, Massachusetts. My sister Emma graduated from high school when barely 15, and in turn was postal clerk for years. In 1940, she married Rudolph Leo, a local boy, who now owns the Blue Rose Cedar Mill, as well as a single mill. The same year that my sister got married, I entered the congregation of the Servants of the Immaculate Heart of Mary after having worked in the post office, but never with the full responsibility of the book like the others. You see, being the tenth one of the family, someone else was always there as assistant or as postal clerk, but I always enjoyed working in the post office. Out of the 10 Ducari offspring, two remain to be mentioned. Two girls, Phoebe and Yvonne, died at the age of 3. My sister Blaine retained as the postmistress assistant in 1935. My mother died January 26, 1941, and Blaine was appointed postmistress February 28, 1941. Never have I seen such love as that of my father and mother. Dad was so proud of my mother, and he loved her so tenderly. One day, I can still see it all as of yesterday. He had come home with a household item he had bought. My mother greeted Dad with, "Why did you buy that? Haven't you more taste than that?" Did my father get angry? Oh no, with a twinkle in his eye and a dear smile, he gently answered, "Well, at least I had taste once in my life, when I sold my wife." No wonder my mother thought the world of my dad. My father had a beautiful voice. In fact, from the age of 15, he sang alone at mass every day until the age of 95, that is, 1 month before his death. My mother did not sing, and I very little, although others in the family had beautiful voices. One day I asked my father, "Aren't you jealous of your brother Pierre? Every one of his daughters sings so beautifully, and I don't." I can still see his sweet face as he answered, "I would not trade my life for all the singers in the world. She is such an outstanding woman. She is such a treasure and a real Christian." And so was my dad, a real treasure. In 1935, my father bought my Aunt Agnes' house next door and moved the post office there. Agnes Cormier, now a widow, had been married to my uncle Thomas Peltier, who was a taxi driver, that is, a horse and buggy style to start with until cars came around, and also a mail carrier, getting the mail pouches from the Cuban station to the post office. This house was large enough to house the post office and 3 apartments, so it could accommodate my sister Blaine's family, our family, which now comprised of my parents, my sister Emma and myself, and my Aunt Agnes could keep her apartment for as long as she wished. My brother Guy took over the general store. After my mother's death, my father went to stay with my brother Guy and his wife, happy to sleep under the roof he had built, happy to serve customers at the store until God called him for his heavenly reward January 22, 1965, 24 years after Mother had died. Yet, never a day had passed without his thinking of her or talking about her, for he missed her so. Dad was conscious in his last sickness until the last day, looking forward to being with Mother again. But a few hours before his death, he sang a hymn to our Blessed Mother, drawing people to his bedside with the sound of a still lovely voice, even on his deathbed. He died while Irenae, one of his ordained sons, was blessing him and his two teaching religious, the oldest and the youngest daughters, were assisting him, along with other members of the family. Father Lawrence DuPerry had recently spent several days with Dad and would be returning for the funeral. My closest sister could not leave her monastery even for such an event. But it is time that I tell you the beautiful story of Attorney Peter Charles Keegan, as I promised. This story I learned from my mother, who later found it in history books. In 1863, during the Civil War, the state of Maine decided to build a railroad from Bangor up to the St. John River. The European and North American Company agreed to accept 10 districts of our woods, but the task proved harder than anticipated. Therefore, more and more land was demanded in payment. Yet all the time, progress of the railroad was very slow. This was almost a shock to the people when they realized that about three-fourths of what people called the American Madawaska had been given away. And yet, but one-third of the proposed railroad had been constructed. Parting with these woods meant such a loss for the state and the people. But worse than all this was that many colonists, unaware of this transaction between the state and the railroad company, and some even before these transactions had taken place, cleared the land and settled down in these parts. When the railroad company realized people had settled down on their land, they ordered some 600 families from Frenchville, Fortin, Wallagrass, Madawaska, and Grand Isle to leave their farms. Remembering the injustice of the deportation from Acadia and how their ancestors had been chased from St. John, Canada, they refused to leave, since they themselves had cleared the land. The case was brought to court. At the time, Attorney Peter Charles Keegan lived in Madawaska. Since 3 years, he was representative at the legislature. Therefore, he presented the case to the legislature, and his eloquence won their consent to buy back the land from the railroad company in order that these farmers could be permitted to stay on. But Governor Graham refused to sanction the farm law. Gratified, the European and North American Company pressed the court case. Thereupon, Mr. Keegan assumed the task of defending the case himself. But in 1876, when Mr. Keegan was renamed as representative at the legislature, the cave was not yet warmed or closed. He now resided in Vandiera. Once again, he pleaded the farmer's case before the legislature, and again his sincerity and concern won the consent to buy back the farmer's land. This time, it was Governor Connor who refused to sanction the law, but Attorney Keegan did not give up. 50 times he went before the court, pleading in favor of the farmers, and he ended up by obtaining from the judges what the governor had refused. The railroad company, tired of the scourge business that had been going on for 10 years, finally accepted the terms as decided at court. So, in 1887, Attorney Keegan, with the help of Mr. Americano, then residing in Central, and also a representative of the main people at the legislature, as well as Representative Major William Dickey from Fort Kent, obtained $30,000 from the state to buy back 60,000 acres of land in order to permit the farmers to keep their land. No wonder the people of the St. John Valley loved and respected this man, Peter Charles Keegan. And those who heard of him from their parents, as I did, long to keep his memory alive. This explains why I accepted from the Van Buren librarian, Miss Martin Peltier, the invitation to share what I knew of the Keegan post office. But my parents, so truly great themselves, found a way to prove their appreciation of Mr. Peter Charles Keegan's devotion to the people, and they gave him a public tribute while he was still alive by insisting that the post office they were opening be named after him. Naturally, the railroad station was also named after him. The post office inspector had repeatedly lauded the excellent postal work of Mrs. Blanche D. Wagon and had assured her that because of the quality of her work, the post office would not be closed, even if many small post offices were now being served by larger post offices. But none of the members of the DuPerry clan have drunk at the fountain of youth. So, even if Blanche loved the people she served and the work she did, she deemed it proper to retire May 28, 1971. The people of the area are now being served by the Van Buren post office. The school in this area is still called Keegan School. I hope it will remain so named as a memorial to a real friend of the valley, Mr. Peter Charles Keegan, and to his friends, my parents, Mr. and Mrs. Napoleon DuPerry, who truly spent their lives helping people of the area. And now for a little quiz on local history. When was Van Buren inaugurated as a town? in 1881, after whom was Van Buren named? Van Buren was named after Martin Van Buren, the 8th President of the United States. Why do you think our town was named after President Van Buren? President Martin Van Buren was president during the ruthless, bloodless war, and he did try to bring about a treaty. What was the ruthless, bloodless war about? It was about the boundary line between Canada and Maine. Both England and Maine claimed this part of the land. Why do we call it the Aroostook Bloodless War? It took place in the Aroostook County, and it was fought with words, not with guns. Can you name the two towns that received their name after this war because they had built forts in case they would have to come to arms? Fort Kent and Fort Fairfield. Why was the treaty called the Ashburton-Webster Treaty? The treaty was so called after the two representatives. Webster was the American representative, and Ashburton was the English representative. Do you know of any other name formally given to this town? Violet Brook and Grand Rivière. Why Violet Brook? It was named Violet Brook after a brook in Van Buren bearing that name. Violet Brook was named after Mr. Francois Violet, who built the first mill here in Van Buren. The brook was on his property. Why was Grand Rivière given to Van Buren? Van Buren was so called because of the St. John River. Who were the first people to settle in our town? The first people to settle in our town were the Indians, Acadians, and Canadians. What is the boundary line between Canada and Van Buren? The boundary line between Canada and Van Buren is the St. John River. Since when is the St. John River the boundary line between Van Buren and Canada? The boundary line between Canada and Van Buren is the St. John River since the Ashburton-Webster Treaty. Here I would like to read you a composition written by Roger Duplessis in 1960 when he was a sixth grader at Champlain School on the St. John River. He writes, "The river separates Maine from Canada. It starts at Allagash and goes all the way to Hamlin, about 12 miles south from Van Buren. It then connects with the Aroostook River near Aroostook Junction in Canada. It then finally goes into the Atlantic Ocean. We can cross here at Van Buren to St. Leonard, New Brunswick. We can cross at Madawaska, 20 miles north into Edmonton and beach. We cross at first point, 44 miles north from Van Buren into Clare and beach. At one point, we do not have to cross a bridge, but we are in Canada. That is in Hammond, 12 miles from Van Buren. When was the Ashburton Treaty signed? The Ashburton-Webster Treaty was signed at the end of the Aroostook Bloodless War in 1842. When did Maine become a state? Maine became a state in 1820. Do you know of anything else that happened here in 1820? Yes, St. Bruno became a parish in 1820. Where was the church then? The church was at that section which we call the pulp mill. A pulp mill was afterwards built on that land to be soon after torn down. The senior citizens had prophesied that it would never run, for it had been built on blessed ground. Was the priest staying here in Van Buren then?